The primary election is almost here. Vote centers will be open May 7th from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Make your vote count. Visit vote.indy.gov for more information. This message was paid for by the Marion County Election Board.
We are back, and the Colts, I guess, are back to work. Off-season program underway. Another edition of Kevin's Corner right here. We'll obviously get into the NFL draft. I would say focus probably today will be Twitter question time. And then next week, we'll give a pretty dive really deep, I think, into the draft. Eddie, if it works for you, maybe Monday for next week's pod. I just think with the draft on Thursday, it's good to get that pod Monday early in the week. Chris Ballard's draft press conference will be Friday. It's also the first time that we hear from Ballard post kind of, the first month of offseason moves. So I do think that angle of him, you can ask questions that aren't just like, hey, what are you thinking about this year's draft class, et cetera, et cetera. So certainly be the focus there. Back from vacation, Mr. Garrison, is that correct?
That's right. We did the podcast on Wednesday. That was my last day of work, and my first day of work back is the podcast, so I'm glad to be back.
Look at that. We appreciate you hopping off the plane and getting right here into the studio. I would say the lone kind of news item to make sure we cross off before we get into just kind of off-season storylines as the spring program gets underway, Eddie. We did see earlier this week an extension for DeForest Buckner, 2 years, $46 million. You know, we are recording this late Wednesday morning. A lot of chatter this morning around how that contract looks. And it does look different for the Colts. It's a bit backloaded. There are some void years on it. That is not how the Colts typically operate. And so I thought it was really curious when all of this happened, exactly why and what does this mean. And honestly, it got me thinking, Eddie, back to Michael Pittman Jr.'s franchise tag. And you and I had this discussion right after the Pittman Jr. tag of, I was content with tagging Pittman and then waiting on the long-term deal, maybe even waiting whatever. I think I said early May, honestly, for it, because my thinking with that is it offered you some flexibility if any certain moves that are not on the horizon right now, if all of a sudden they show up. And now you can insert yourself there. And in a way with Buckner, that's kind of what the Colts are doing right now. They're giving themselves flexibility. I don't envision some sort of move happening. Stephen Holder, who we had on our show earlier today, reported that he expects, you know, that additional cap space to just roll over into next year. But it just gives you the chance, if all of a sudden something happens, probably around the draft, can you at least answer those phone calls? Can you entertain that? And I do think that is really important to make sure you give yourself flexibility. So if something unforeseen does happen, now you can have that conversation. So I'm fine with it. Again, it's different than how they've typically operated. I think the cap hit for this year is just $8 million, which, you know, is looking to be in well north of 20 there. So I did want to make sure we mentioned that about Buckner. You know, just as far as him with the extension, I mean, I've said this before. He's one of the best-looking athletes I've ever seen. I mean, like 6'7", 295, carries the weight so well, does not look like a dude that is all of a sudden going to taper off into his 30s. I just don't envision that happening. And interior defensive linemen, I think, have proven that, you know, they can play a little bit into their 30s as well. You know, his durability. I mean, the durability and the three-down production, those defensive tackles do not grow on trees, and he has been that. I mean, hell, the only game he's missed, Eddie, is close contact for COVID in his 4 years here in Indy. So I think you can start there with Buckner and just say, great, great player. You know, if you want to nitpick it or if you want to take it from a different angle, which I think could also be true, you know, in an ideal world, what are you paying Grover? Grover was, what, $13 million annually? Does that sound right?
Sounds about right, yeah.
So, you know, in an ideal
39, I think, yeah.
Yeah, in an ideal world, you're not paying 30-year-old defensive tackles $13 million annually and $23 million annually. You're paying your 26-year-old corner that money, or your, you know, 26-year-old edge rusher that money. So that would be kind of the, you know, with Ballard, it's never been about finding good players. I think he has found plenty of good players. It's finding good players at the positions that matter the most. And I do think, to be fair to defensive tackle, especially Buckner's position, I do think that position has risen significantly in the importance on a football team over the last handful of years. So, yeah, that's where things stand on Buckner. I mean, Eddie, if you look at it, they continue to do the 2- and 3-year deals for a lot of these guys, keep that core in place through, you know, 26, when I guess Richardson, when you start to pay him a little bit more money and some other stuff like that. So any thoughts on the Buckner extension front?
I thought it was well-earned, and I thought it was
well-earned is a great way to describe it, by the way.
I thought it was needed, too, just for, like, continuity's sake. I know Shane's big on continuity, but, like, in terms of the locker room and the leadership and continuing to build the culture around your rookie quarterback, it's helpful having guys like DeForest Buckner who have, you know, been through the ringer of bad seasons. They've experienced making it to the Super Bowl and the playoffs, you know, aspirations the Colts have underneath Anthony Richardson. So I think it was a good move. I don't mind it at all. The only nitpick that I would think of like you is just having so much money invested right there at the defensive line is how much of that's going to leave you with spending elsewhere, especially down the line. But like you said, the restructure of Buckner puts him around like 8.5, I think, this year. Colts are now at $29 million. Per Joel Erickson of the NFLPA, he tweeted that out earlier this morning / this afternoon. So I'll be fascinated to see if they do something with that money after the draft, because highly, highly, highly doubt they make any more additions to the roster prior to next Thursday.
Yeah, kind of going back to your continuity point, again, I at times I think continuity is way too much gospel for the organization. But having said that, Buckner's just been such a great pro. And he does stand for everything you want to be about. And I do understand Ballard's rationale to a degree. And, like, you know, when you extend your own the year before their contract comes up, it does send a message to the locker room of, hey, if I play well, you know, they are going to reward me. And I do think that is an important message to send. And again, I'm a fan of the flexibility. I think you just always keep yourself in a position of, to steal the Kevin Pritchard phrase that, or the word that he uses often as the Pacers president, optionality. Try to have that as much as you can, because you never know. You never know what can happen. For what it's worth, if you want to look ahead to 2025 and the free agents there, Ryan Kelly, Julian Blackman, on the one-year deal, of course, E.J. Speed, Kylan Granson, Mo Alie-Cox. We'll see about Kwity-Paye, that fifth-year option, you know, can be picked up here coming up in a few weeks. We'll see if it is picked up for 2025 or not. So, yeah, that covers everything Buckner-wise. Should we hop into off-season program?
Yes, I was going to ask you about that, actually. What takeaways from, what, that start yesterday, right?
Yeah, and I would say, I guess the one, like, concrete thing from Shane was just, you know, doesn't expect Anthony Richardson to be, you know, expects him to be participating, and maybe you'll limit him a little bit. But again, on the Richardson front, nothing for a month, Eddie. You know, nothing of a 7-on-7, 11-on-11, on field with, you know, coaches in some sort of team setting for a month there. So, you know, his activity over those 9 OTAs and many camp practices will obviously be something to watch. But, again, nothing until May. I think it's May 21st, I believe, is the first OTA. You know, a couple items I think I'm watching for. Year 3 of Gus Bradley, are there tweaks? You know, oftentimes you hear multiple years in a system, you start to do some things differently. You evolve it a little bit. Is there an element of holding my breath for this? Sure. But I do think it's a very fair question to ask. Does the arrival of Charlie Partridge influence anything new defensive line-wise in creating more consistent pressure, creating more timely pressure? Do you go about your business in a way of, hey, we want our guys to be a little fresher for the fourth quarter? You know, do you kind of view it in that light? It's kind of like, you know, a college basketball coach maybe handling his team differently in February to make sure they're peaking in March. Something along those lines there. So I'm curious about the defensive tweaks. Obviously, the position group to me that will have the most eyes on them, non-Richardson division, will be the secondary. Does anybody emerge? And I guess I'm mainly talking about kind of the year two guys in general. If you want to separate the secondary, you know, when I say year two, okay, what about Will Mallory? What about Adetamiwa Adebare? What about Blake Freeland? You know, Evan Hall coming off the injury. Probably falls into a little bit of that group. Daniel Scott coming off the injury. Again, you know, guys in the secondary, I guess if you want to go back there, you know, what is the second year for Jalen Jones? I thought the rookie year was very encouraging. Is it another step forward? So, you know, this time last year, and I know it didn't work out for him very well, but Eddie, this is when Daryl Baker Jr. earned the Colts' trust. So the opportunity is there to earn the trust. Now, of course, you got to back it up in training camp and in the preseason and in games, and obviously Baker Jr. did not do that. But still, this does offer a chance to earn that. And Juju Brents' injury was a huge reason why Daryl Baker Jr. was able to earn that. And then I guess if you want to go to the injured guys, where's Jelani Woods at? Where is Juju Brents at? Where's Evan Hall? Is he your backup running back? Is it Trey Sermon? You know, how do those roles play out? So sounds like Braden Smith, injury-wise, should be okay for the spring as well. But, you know, those I think are some of the guys that I'm looking at. It did look like Drew Ogletree was in the building this week. I know he's on the commissioner's exempt list, but
I saw a video or I saw a picture of him on social media.
Yeah, he looked like he was in the building. So, you know, does that impact how you view tight end at all? You know, that sort of situation there. Again, we've talked about it before with tight end. They've invested a decent amount of draft capital, you know, rounds 3 through 6 here with 4 tight ends over the last couple of years. So those are some of the off-season storylines, Eddie, I'll be keeping an eye on.
Did you mention the battle of the starting safety next to Julian Blackmon at all?
Yeah, that is probably – I guess I was kind of getting there with secondary, but, yeah, to be specific, I'm glad that you went back there. Is it Nick Cross and Rodney Thomas II? Where is Daniel Scott coming off the torn ACL in the spring? You know, I know it's not the exact same, but I kind of get to the second-year jumps. You know, Kenny Moore really made it. Grover's second-year jump was probably more of a third-year jump. Again, who falls into that category? Where's Titus Leo? Where's Isaiah Land? Mm-hmm. Where's Jake Witt? You know, day three guys, waiver claim guys. Do any of them emerge? That would be something. But, yeah, position battle-wise.
Now, isn't Witt coming off an injury?
Say it again.
Isn't Witt coming off an injury?
Yeah, I mean, Witt and Leo both missed the entire season. Witt, I think it was a hip injury for him. Leo was a knee. Yeah, so both those guys. And just where they're at physically, you know, especially Witt, because he was such a slender guy for a tackle prospect. But, yeah, again, position battles, you know, tight end playing time, running back depth chart, the safety spot next to Blackmon, like you said, that would be where I would go.
Now, what about backup running back? Where does that rank?
Yeah, I think that's on there. I mean, and you know, certainly it can rise big time depending on how you view Jonathan Taylor or how Jonathan Taylor's health operates. And, you know, again, we'll get more to this next week, but, you know, I'd probably put running back in that day three draft need. You know, linebacker would be on that list. Maybe a little O-line depth. I think in an ideal world, you look at O-lines and, like, at some point you find a day three starter there. That's kind of how I would view looking at next week a little bit there. So, got a full article up on 107.5thefan.com that looks more into that, but just a few storylines on that end.
I know we'll get into this next week, certainly, with your positional mock draft and whatnot, with the draft being next week, but I saw Peter Schrager had an interesting take of the Colts trading up to get Malik Nabers. What were your thoughts on that? Because I know he's one of like the rare people that's had the Colts trading up.
Yeah, I was surprised to see, first off, Nabers even getting to 9. I mean, that seems a little bit low for him even. Obviously, the trade-up to 9 would be massively forward into Chris Ballard. I mean, we talked about it on last week's pod, Eddie. I mean, what, Jonathan Taylor, a 3-spot trade-up in round 2, and Nick Cross, the only times he's traded up in the first 3 rounds. I guess what you have to look at if you are a team, it's like, you know, do you view it just as 2 needs? Do you think wideout and corner are your only needs? If you do that, what does Schrager have? As a future second? I think that's what he had as the draft pick you would give up. I guess you would view, you know, wideout early on and obviously with Nabers and then corner round 2, and then that would be kind of your significant moves of the offseason there. So I just, boy, it seems so un-Ballard-like. And then again, Nabers even getting to 9. Like, is this just... is this CJ Stroud round 2?
Maybe.
Are we just talking to talk here because there's a 3-month gap between the end of the season and when the draft starts? Because that's what it almost seems like here.
It seems like there have been a little bit of, you know, minor reports about his just character of him, of himself, of being like already portraying that wide receiver diva kind of mind. So I think that could be the only reason why that I could see him already, you know, possibly slipping just to 9 a little bit. But, I mean, the talent, we've already talked about it last week. He's just, he's explosive.
Yeah, I will believe it once I see it, you know?
Yeah.
In terms of exactly him getting that far down.
Are you ready for Twitter questions?
In the draft. Yes, let's do them.
Oh, by the way, we didn't even talk about the Masters.
Well, we didn't talk about it because we don't need to. Okay. There's no bigger compliment I can give than Scottie Scheffler made. Can I steal the Dan Hurley quote? We made a very hard tournament look easy. Scottie Scheffler made a very hard tournament and very hard golf course look easy. Eddie, there are only two guys better than 4 under. This is a difficult Masters from a scoring standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
And Scheffler was incredible. I mean, it got to the point there where I said, let's fire up the mower. Hole 14, I said, it's time to go mow. The consequential shots are over. He's got too big of a lead. He's not going to wilt. And, I mean, we had four guys tied for the lead with 10 holes to go. You know, it was a great leaderboard. And then just wilt, and Scotty doesn't do it. It's absurd. It is absurd. It's machine-like. I'm jealous of it. Yeah. Unbelievable by him.
Zero hole-in-ones? Is that the new thing that you're trying to figure out now? How many?
I have never made a hole-in-one.
Really?
Never been close.
The golfer that you are, you've never had one?
No, I've never been close. Now, I do think there's a bit of a misconception on the ease of making a hole-in-one, and your tone is kind of hinting at that.
Well, no, you're just supposed to be like the best golfer in the state of Indiana, and I would have thought you would have had one.
That is certainly couldn't be further from the truth. You know, slight.
I hold you in very high regard.
Average high school golfer, benefit
golfers
from,
in the state
from great teammates. Yeah, I've said this often about, you know, media people. I can get the ball in the air, so then, you know, media people are like, oh wow, that's incredible.
Mm.
No hole in one, never been close. Praying these new Mizuno irons will somehow.
I did catch 18 years with you last
18 years in the high school irons. Thank you to the great folks at Mizuno. Shout out to Kim, who fitted me at the Golf Club of Indiana. Could not recommend it more. I'm excited. And if this can't do it, nothing will. That's how I view them. That's the pressure on these Mizunos.
All right, enough golf talk. Let's get to those Twitter questions. First
You're
up,
the one that started it.
I know. Jay is up first. Hey, KB, would love to get your thoughts on these first-round scenario rankings on the pod. I would imagine these are all players you will talk about over the next couple of the weeks. Number one, trade up to pick 6, 7, 8, or 9 and select Roma Dunze. Option number two, trade up.
Should we stop there? Yeah. Are there multiple of these?
Yes, let's go one by one because there's six.
All right, give me the first one.
Trade up. Anywhere to pick 6, 7, 8, or 9 and select Rome Odunze.
Yeah, it's just a hair too rich. If I'm trading up, it's probably more neighbors. You know, I just look at the yards after catch, the make you miss ability, the watch me do some things. I think Odunze is really, really solid, really good, but still, if I'm going to do it, that's probably what I would do. So I would say too rich.
Trade up to 11, 12, or 13 and select Brock Bowers.
Intriguing. Part of me thinks if Bowers gets past the Jets at 10, then he's there at 15.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at Vegas right now, it's Jets and Colts, easily 1 and 2 for Bowers. So I know that'd be a little risky if you kind of view it in that sense, but that one is intriguing.
Scenario number three, draft Brian Thomas Jr., Terrion Arnold, or Quinyon Mitchell at 15.
I'm an Arnold guy at 15. I think I can live with that overall scenario. You know, if you get on the clock and those three are on the board. The Arnold stuff that is intriguing to me is the versatility. I love how he's wired. And I think you can get a little bit of, hey, could he follow some dudes around? You know, again, going back to Nico Collins in that season finale. If you had that option,
oh yeah,
could that have stymied some things?
Number four, trade back into the 20s. And select Cooper DeHaan or Xavier Worthy.
Do they go DeJean?
Yeah.
Or DeHaan?
It's DeHaan.
DeHaan sounds like he was born in Paris. He played at Iowa. Don't we go DeJean?
Well, maybe we talk about his DeJeans.
Oh, look at that. Boy, you think Bauer would love
that? Bad, by the way.
Yeah, that wasn't one of your better ones. Trade back into the 20s. You think Bauer's got to be salivating at that idea. That's got Bauer written all over it.
Especially with all the rumblings of them and interest in Xavier Worthy.
Yeah.
Number 5 in terms of his 6 scenarios. Trade up to pick 6 or 7 for Dallas Turner. So you got to get ahead of the Falcons.
Yeah, I mean, boy, I love Turner. But, boy, that's high. I mean, that's really high up. Would 15 to 9, you know, Schrager said a future second. Would that satisfy? I don't know. Part of me thinks you would need even a little bit more than that. I mean, when you're trading in the front half around 1, those asking prices are crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So, again, I love Turner, but it's probably a no on that.
And the final option here, stay at 15 and then trade back into the first round, into the 20s, and select Chop Robinson.
Yeah, I no thanks on that. I get that there are some unbelievable physical traits and et cetera, but I just need to see a little bit more production from that. So, yeah, I'm going to go with no on that trade back scenario.
Pumpkin Pastry is next. With the well-documented pursuit of Danielle Hunter in free agency, is this Chris Ballard's way of communicating to Quiddy Pay that he isn't getting the job done? And with this unusually aggressive attempt to get a big-name free agent, does that mean Ballard doesn't have the belief in the high-end defensive ends in the draft?
I forget the exact date on the old Quiddy Pay thing.
Isn't it like May?
Yeah, I want to say like second week of May, third, something like that. You know, just in general, is it the player or is it the need? You know, how do you view it? Is it Danielle Hunter or nobody? Or is there a real need there that's not being talked about enough? Again, I probably fall in the latter. Actually, I do fall in the latter. I'm probably more of a, I think there's a need there. So I would look at it. But, you know, the thing I love about the draft, Eddie, is, and just roster building in general, is actions will speak louder than words. What you think of players, you will find out in the draft. And so we will get an answer on that. Obviously, we'll get a fifth-year option answer on Quiddy Pay here in the next couple of weeks. So I think it's more of they really, really were intrigued by Danielle Hunter and less of the need. But again, in my opinion, I'd probably go on the reverse of that.
May 2nd, by the way, is that fifth-year option.
That is, okay. Yeah, it's a little earlier draft this year just with how the calendar falls.
Yeah. The next Twitter question comes from Austin. Where would you rank Anthony Richardson in this year's quarterback class? Also, my wife, Cheyenne, her birthday is next week, and she is forced to listen along in the vehicle to most podcasts. Can you give her a shout-out?
How about that, Cheyenne? Tiger Woods' niece, Cheyenne, by the way, if you want to get a little Tiger mention in there. Austin, shout-out to you. More importantly, shout-out to your wife. Hope she has a great birthday celebration, and that you treat her very, very well, which I'm sure you do, Austin. Man of integrity, you strike me as. The question, Eddie, was Richardson in this year's QB class?
Correct. Where would you rank him?
Boy, if I watch Notre Dame against USC one more time, I might rank Caleb Williams below Richardson. No, I'd probably go Caleb 1. There, you know, there's a little bit of Mahomes-iness to it that's intriguing. I don't know. Jaden Daniels certainly probably is the closest physical comp to Richardson and just the dual threat nature to it.
But the one thing those two have,
production,
availability.
Very different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Availability, production, big games.
Right. Yeah. I'd probably go, I mean, I'm not super anti.
Both Heisman winners.
Yeah. I'm not super anti Drake May, but I'd probably put Richardson right there in between Daniels and May. So yeah. That's where I would go.
Saw this guy in person on Monday night when he had that unreal sliding catch. Did you see that, by the way? In the Reds game?
Oh, Ellie?
Yeah.
Yes. I don't want to talk about the Reds with how he played against the Mariners.
I mentioned Ellie De La Cruz because Jake's question says, Ellie De La Cruz is an insane athlete, much like Anthony Richardson, that has shown an ability to take over the game but only has a small sample size, much like Anthony Richardson. Ellie has a propensity so far to strike out a lot. What would you say is an area of Anthony's game that would behoove him this offseason to improve in besides staying healthy? Thank you as always and love the pod. By the way, that park is beautiful. I was there on Sunday and Monday. Yes.
Okay. Are you one that wants to do all the parks?
Yes.
Okay. Where are we at?
That was park number 7.
Gosh, I haven't been to many. Now that I think about it. But I do love me some Great American. Yeah, it's a really interesting point Jake makes, and I think I've used the Adam Dunn baseball analogy before with Anthony Richardson.
Yep.
You've just got to make sure there's enough home runs to offset the probably lack of consistent singles, doubles on base standpoint. You know, it's interesting, Eddie, when you look back on those Richardson numbers from last season, and again, the sample size is incredibly small, but that's all we can go off of. I think when he was done for the year, once he got hurt, I want to say he ranked 32nd out of 33 quarterbacks in accuracy at that point. And that was clearly the biggest question. But yet the takeaway, which I think is the right takeaway, is like, damn, there's some real potential here because you saw some of the big plays. And yet you still didn't see him like air it out. Like, you know, you didn't see a ton of those deep ball shots in the 173 snaps. But yet you still saw some of the explosive playmaking. And again, this gets back to the difference between Richardson and Philip Rivers. Rivers needs methodical. He needs death by 1,000 paper cuts. He needs a bunch of singles and doubles. Whereas Richardson, like, it's one of those things where if you're opposing defense and you're thinking about accepting a penalty and making it whatever, second and longer or third and short, hell, I might go third and short. You give him two cracks at it, he might scramble out of one of them and burn you. You know, that's the dynamic he brings, which is something I think this team has lacked, is just that explosive playmaking ability to it. So, you know, the accuracy increasing, I guess, to answer Jake's question, would probably, you know, in an ideal world, you know, I've always said if you can get, what was he last year? Was it 50? I don't think he got to 60%. I want to say it was like 58, 59% if you just want to purely look at the completion percentage number. You know, if you could hover that just north of 60, you know, most, you know, whatever, the upper end quarterbacks are,
you know, 59.5.
That was the final number for him. And yeah. What was the league leader last year? How many were above 70? Let's go there.
Let me look. Hold on.
For hell, that number's probably going down with how the game's evolved a little bit.
Let's see. Dak Prescott was first.
North of 70%?
No.
No?
Only two north of 70.
Oh, there were two north of 70.
One wouldn't qualify. The other one I would have to look further into, but Mason Rudolph was one. He played 4 games. And then Jake Browning was the other. He played 9 with 243 attempts, 70.4. Rudolph, in those 4 games, 74.3.
You know, if Richardson, again, can get you to 62, 63, just make sure you minimize. You know, make sure, again, the outs, if you want to continue the baseball. I feel like we do so many baseball analogies.
They're so easy.
If you want to continue the baseball analogy, do the outs just become ground outs and fly balls, not, you know, strikeouts?
Matthew Stafford last season, 62.6. Gardner Minshew was 62.2%. Correct.
Really? That's a lot. I mean, Stafford, for example, that's a lot closer to Richardson than I would have guessed. But
Jordan Love was 64%.
That's kind of where I'm at with it. But again, he just stresses you. He just stresses you in different ways.
Two Twitter questions left. Zach. Hey, Kevin, just wondering what your thoughts are on Ballard trading back into the first round. Maybe this will be the more aggressive move people were looking for after he wasn't able to acquire any big outside names in free agency. Thinking along the lines of taking a corner or rusher with the first pick and then an offensive playmaker with the second pick like Xavier Worthy.
Yeah, that's a big climb that high. But again, it kind of goes back to the, do you think it's just two needs, Eddie?
Could you see them? I don't know if you would be able to do this at all if a team would even, if his value is that high, but could you see them like drafting Edge with 15 and then maybe you trade Quiddy and your second maybe to move up? Yeah,
that's interesting. It's a bit intriguing, you know, when you bring up that possibility. You don't see it a ton, but you do occasionally see that. You obviously you see a little bit more on the day three stuff, you know, for smaller draft picks or, you know, whatever, less capital. I guess to answer Zach's question, you know, what are they, 46? Is that their round two pick? Somewhere square in the middle. I mean, that's a lot to get to 30. You know, 46 to 30 is a lot to move up. So I do think that is something that I'd be a little bit more curious about on that end. So how all of that plays out, a lot of it would just have to be, we have two needs and that's it. Like I want to see them, I think, take another shot at edge. That's how I view it. And I know not everybody is in that category. And, you know, there are a decent amount of edges on that team, but that's how I would look at it.
How would you rank the edge rushers?
Turner, certainly. Then probably Verse. You know, Verse at 15, is there enough pop there? You worry about the age. Latu, it's all going to come down to, it's a little Montez Sweat-like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you believe in the medical or not? And even Sweat, it's taken a couple years. That's probably where I would look at kind of the first-round guys. But again, trading back into round one, I mean, boy. I mean, you're talking a 16-spot jump, 17-spot, 15-spot, whatever. That's big. Really big.
Final Twitter question comes from Jamie. Cornerback, defensive end, and pass catcher, all needs for the Colts. Could these positions all be best player available at 15, therefore not forcing a need?
That's a good point. I mean, I've always been... It's a good point by Jamie. I've always been, you got to marry the both. You know, it's not just best player available. It's not just strictly need. You got to find. I mean, I'd almost, you know, kind of rank my needs on a separate board and say, all right, let's keep a board of best player available at needs that matter, especially with the premium positions, especially with premium draft picks, I should say. Which again, I thought that's what they did a nice job of last year. So, I mean, if you look at it, yeah, that could very well be the case. You know, I feel like it's a decent offensive tackle draft class. I'm trying to think where some of the other depth lies. It doesn't sound like a super deep edge rushing class. But, yeah, I think that's a strong, strong possibility.
All right, what's your prediction, Pacers and Bucks?
Ooh, how many games is Giannis playing?
Until further notice, I'm going to say zero.
Oh, if it's zero, Pacers and... boy, pardon me, I want to say Pacers and five. Lillard's a little banged up. Yeah, maybe Pacers in six. I mean, Giannis out for game one and two. If indeed he is, Eddie, it's just beyond paramount you get game one. Because if you get game one, the boulder on the back is now two boulders for Milwaukee. And Giannis is feeling pressure to push it. And again, Eddie, if he plays, I mean, we all watch Giannis. The dude needs the peak athleticism. He's not standing behind the arc, not using athleticism and banging home six threes a game.
Correct.
He's living in the paint. He's living at the rim. He's living finishing through Turner, and he's living at the foul line. And he's getting you in foul trouble. And if you limit any of that, it's a massive win. And he's averaged, what, 42 and 13 against the Pacers this season?
Yeah.
I mean, it's been the issue, and I'm not reminding anybody, yes, you've won 4 of 5, but...
Haven't played them since Doc Rivers took over as the head coach.
Much. And both. I mean, so much has changed. Obviously, you've got Siakam and...
Correct.
You know, Buddy Hield and Bruce Brown and what Jay Crowder for them and Patrick Beverley for them, even though Halliburton's cooked them in their history together. That's still just a different matchup. Boy, what a fascinating series. Just it's turned into a, like, I've gone from this like be super competitive in round one to like, damn, you should win this series.
Yeah.
And again, these opportunities, particularly the NBA, they don't grow on trees that like look like this. I mean, theoretically, if the seeds hold, you're getting Milwaukee without their best player for a substantial part of the series, and the Knicks without arguably their best player. I don't know, maybe 1A, probably Brunson's their best player, but Randall, of course, being out. I mean, that's, and again, who knows? Maybe the Sixers will upset the Knicks if the Sixers win tonight, or the Heat. You know, who knows how that'll play out, but. Yeah, it's just it's really interesting to look at it like that.
I'm going to be fascinated to see how they come out in game one because there's been so much national attention as of late.
The national people are picking the Pacers.
Yes. Like, there's a lot of national people picking the Pacers, right. And the last couple games of the year, you heard TJ McConnell talk about this. You heard Rick Carlisle talk about this. They've got to grow up. And now that they're getting to the postseason for the first time for a lot of these players, and they're dealing with the national attention again of having the expectation now of possibly upsetting the Bucks in the first round, how do they come out? Do they come out with their pants down and nervous and just whiz down their leg, or do they come out prepared and locked in and ready to go?
Yeah, it is a great point. You know, 4 years without a playoff appearance, 6 years without a playoff win, 10 years without a playoff series win. We are not used to that. I know Colts fans can probably relate a little bit, and hell, Colts fans might be Pacers fans. So I know I'm not talking to everybody here, but I mean, for those unfamiliar with the Pacers history, it's one of the worst playoff droughts the franchise has seen in probably 3 or 4 decades.
Oh, yeah.
So all of that. Rick Carlisle hasn't won a playoff series in 10 years. You know, that angle to it as well. So all of it. He is Eddie Garrison. I'm Kevin Bowen. Let's go Monday. Monday, we'll come back. Draft-centric podcast coming at you. And then we'll probably go Friday next week, recapping that round one pick. Everybody have a great week, great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.